We said, no, we don't represent Wall Street. We don't represent the billionaire class. So it ends up I'm the only candidate up here of the many candidates who has no super PAC.
The numbers don't add up, and many people will actually be worse off than they are right now.
The standoff is over now, but today the FBI searches a wildlife refuge for explosives and booby traps.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:09, and it is Friday. It's February 12th, 2016, and welcome to it. Let's start first with your global business intel from the markets. Japan's main stock index divided nearly 5% today, leading all the other Asian markets lower after a sell-off in banking shares rolled investors in Europe and in the U.S. People seem to be headed to gold. Global stocks have been in a slump since the beginning of the year when China's market plunged dramatically. Investors also are recognizing that prices rose too high during those several years of artificial support from ultra-easy monetary policies of central banks. That's going to be one of our focuses today as we talk about Federal Reserve Chairman Janet Yellen's testimony yesterday before the Senate. She was before the House the day before. And if you're like me, you're just a little confused about where she stands, if the Fed is really solidly behind the monetary policy they've put forward. This is what she told the Senate committee yesterday.
There is always some chance of a recession in any year, but the evidence suggests that expansions don't die of old age.
Yellen says the central bank is studying the feasibility of pushing short-term interest rates into negative territory should it need to give the be needed to give the economy an added boost. And we'll talk about what negative territory might mean as well. The market's reacting, as you heard Vic say, to this earlier with mixed numbers this morning. Also yesterday, we heard from the COO of Twitter after stock in that company has tanked over the last few days. They're trying to reassure the customer base and investors that they are on a path, a healthy path. COO Adam Bain was on CNBC.
We're focused on live because we think live is actually a really powerful part of the platform. Whether it's live video or live information, we think we've got a massive opportunity when it comes to live.
Bain reminded people that the earnings were actually pretty steady, although user growth has started to level off, and the share price, however, is also leveling off and actually falling. Did a little bit better yesterday, but not much. And so let's bring in our first guest for a conversation about Janet Yellen, the Fed, and the economy. David Beckworth is an associate professor at Western Kentucky University, a visiting scholar at Mercatus Center at the George Mason University, also a adjunct at the Cato Institute. And David is with us this morning on the Opening Bell. Good morning, David.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Well, we appreciate you getting up and being on with us this morning. Interested in your take on Janet Yellen. Are you just as sort of confused as I am watching 2 days of testimony?
Yes, I'm actually a little disappointed. I was hoping for more decisiveness from her. As you know, the markets have been in turmoil. There's been a number of indicators that the economy is slowing down, and it would be good to have some decisiveness. Instead, yesterday what we heard was, you know, on one hand, they'll be watching the data. On the other hand, they still really want to raise interest rates this year. And I think what the market needs to hear, what we all need to hear, is that they'll do whatever it takes to make sure the recovery isn't stalled. We had the slowdown coming out of the end of last year. GDP was down, manufacturing was down, expected inflation's falling, and we had stock market problems. And what we need is some decisive, you know, commitment from the Fed that they'll do whatever it takes moving forward.
As you know, I'm probably, with a few investors and analysts, the only person that watched pretty much all of her testimony over both days. And she really did give kind of wishy-washy answers, didn't she? How impactful is that globally?
Well, I think it's very important. I think, you know, that the mere mention of, like, negative interest rates is another tool to use indicates the Fed really hasn't laid out a game plan. They haven't thought through all the options. You know, again, on one hand, she said she's going to keep negative rates on the table, but on the other hand, she wants to raise interest rates going forward, even if not as many as she had hoped initially. And that just paints a picture of indecisiveness. You know, the irony in this is that I believe all last year when the Fed talked up interest rates, it put in motion the very problems we're seeing today. All of 2015, the last part of 2014, the Fed really talked up interest rates, and that got priced into the market. If you look at Fed Fund future rates, they were going up all last year, and I think that kind of slowed the recovery down. It also put a damper on China. China's currency is linked to the dollar, so as the Fed talked up rates, it pulled the dollar up and the yuan up, and I think it also caused problems there. So some of the problems we're seeing now are Fed's decisions and actions in the past coming home to roost.
We're talking with David Beckworth, who's a professor at associate professor at Western Kentucky University, also a public policy researcher at the Cato Institute, at David Beckworth on Twitter. And David, in our next segment, we're going to get into more of this and also kind of look back to 2008 as well. You didn't have kind words for the Fed back then either. So we'll do that after we take a break and check traffic this morning. And good morning, Mary Mandeville.
From ABC News Wall Street Now, Japan's main stock index dove nearly 5% today, leading other Asian markets lower. The Dow's closed down 254 points yesterday to 15,660. The S&P 500 lost 23 points. The NASDAQ Composite fell 17. The economy of the 19-country Eurozone expanded by a quarterly rate of 0.3% in the last quarter of 2015, a relatively weak performance given cheap energy, a weaker currency, and monetary stimulus. The zone's unemployment rate remains about 10%. Uber says it will pay $28.5 million to settle two lawsuits that claim that it misled customers about its safety procedures. Uber was charging a fee for each ride for what it called industry-leading background checks on drivers. Turns out the drivers weren't even fingerprinted. A House committee has approved a Republican bill to take the operation of the nation's air traffic control system away from the government and turn it over to a private nonprofit corporation run by airlines and other aviation interests. Critics call it a giveaway to the airlines. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. We're talking with David Beckworth, an associate professor at Western Kentucky University and an adjunct at the Cato Institute, about the economy. And David, before the break, we were talking just briefly about Janet Yellen. And she mentioned, and you mentioned, something called negative interest rates. For our audience who may not be all the way up on economic policy, what does that actually mean?
Well, the Fed would actually start charging banks money to deposit their funds at the Fed. So they would actually be charged a fee for doing business with the Fed. So it'd be the equivalent of one of us going to our banks, and instead of getting some positive interest rate on our savings account, we'd actually be charged to put money in the bank. And the idea is that you wouldn't sit on your money. Instead of, you know, saving your money, you'd go and spend it. And if the Fed did that to banks, banks would then do that to us, and we'd go and spend our money.
And so what would be the ripple, what would be the overall impact on the economy of something like that?
Well, it's hard to say for sure, but my sense is it's not going to work very well. It's been tried in Japan, it's been tried in Europe, and a number of central banks have tried it. But the problem is that in order to make this really work, you'd have to lower it to such a point that would actually make it worthwhile to spend. And people can always hold cash. If you have the option between earning a negative interest rate at your bank and holding cash and earn 0%, people will start holding cash. There are storage costs you have to get past. But once you get to a certain point, it may make sense to start holding more physical cash if you're going to earn a negative rate at the bank. So until they get past this issue, it's an institutional issue. I don't see it really making that much difference. Maybe on the margin it helps a little bit, but I don't see it making a big difference.
If the Fed goes ahead later this year and raises interest rates and things have not improved, how bad will that be, do you think?
I think the Fed already got ahead of the recovery. As I mentioned before, just simply talking up rates all last year, It people priced it into their decision making, and that got ahead of the recovery. It's unfortunate that our economy is so weak that just that talking up can make us so vulnerable. But that's the condition of where we are. And should the Fed go ahead and raise rates again, I feel fairly confident it would get ahead of the recovery and possibly turn the slowdown into something worse.
And this is sort of bringing a lot of memories back to 2008, and you were sort of front and center back then talking about how Fed policy may have made that situation worse. Are we reliving history?
I don't think we're nowhere near as vulnerable as we were back then. Back then, we had a lot of debt. We had a lot of weaknesses in the economy, a credit boom. We have some weaknesses in today, but back then, I think the Fed made matters worse by effectively tightening policy in 2008. It was certain that we're going to probably have a recession. In fact, we were having a recession. Housing was a mess. Wall Street was being hammered. And then the Fed in 2008 sat on its hands between end of April and October. They didn't cut rates any farther down. They also signaled that they were going to raise rates. So kind of like what they did last year and what they're talking about doing now, the Fed actually signaled in 2008 that it wanted to raise rates at the worst possible time. So in some sense, it is a repeat. I don't think it's as bad, but they're making a similar mistake in wanting to raise rates when the economy is weakening.
Someone I know yesterday who's not a business person asked me, and it's sort of a fair question, I guess, why does everybody hang on every word that the Federal Reserve board members and chairman says?
That's a great question, and it's a testament to the ad hoc kind of what we'd call discretionary nature of the Fed. The Fed is kind of making it up as it goes along, and then that's one of the arguments for a more rules-based approach to monetary policy. It would be nice to know what the Fed would do in different circumstances going forward. So if there's some kind of rule or kind of a process by which we would be able to predict what the Fed would do, it would create a lot more certainty. But because it doesn't do that, we do hang on every word. Every FOMC meeting, we want to know what's going to happen, which speaks to, again, it's just the Fed's become incredibly ad hoc in its operations.
And reading your writing and others' writing, and also watching her testimony before the House the other day, they're not really the Fed is not being completely open and transparent, are they? There's some sort of documents and other things that they keep secret, or they're trying to keep secret, it appears. How is that impacting all of this?
Well, I think they're doing a much better job than they have in the past. So they're very transparent in, you know, what their decision is and meetings and minutes do come out. But the one area where I think they could do better is with their estimates of where interest rates should be. There's this idea called the natural interest rate, which is nothing more than what would maybe be called the market clearing rate. Where would interest rates need to be in order for the economy to really get back on a healthy pace? And the Fed has its own internal estimate of that, and I think that'd be useful if it released it to the public on a regular basis. It'd make conversations between the Fed and Congress more meaningful. It'd help us understand more what the Fed is doing. But when the Fed comes out and says, for example, we think it's about time to raise rates, well, why? Why do you think it's time? Give us some kind of reason. Give us where you think interest rates should be and why they need to be there. And so there is a little bit of mystery still, though it's gotten better over the years.
We have about 30 seconds left. I'm interested because just a couple of weeks ago, we were all talking about China and how China was the reason we were all seeing all of this economic turmoil. Now everybody seems to be focused on the Fed. Is it still China? Should we still be concerned about China?
Oh, absolutely. China is due for a large devaluation coming forward, and I think it's just a matter of time. And the irony of this is that the Fed's talking up a rate over the past year, I think, is locked in that devaluation. Because their currency is tied to ours, whatever the Fed does here affects them, and I think that's going to come back to haunt us.
David Beckworth, an associate professor at Western Kentucky University, a visiting scholar at Mercatus College, and also an adjunct at the Cato Institute. You can find him on Twitter at Cato Institute. That's the Cato Institute. And then David at David Beckworth. David, thanks for being with us this morning.
Thank you.
It's 5:27 now on the opening bell. Let's bring in Vic Vaughn from the newsroom. Vic, what's in the news this morning?
Hey, good morning, Steve. We're looking into a new report regarding Chicago's public enemy number one and why he may not be brought back to Chicago to face charges. We'll tell you who and why coming up.
All right. And also we will, coming up in our next segment, talk with Scott Catoon. And a little later on, the burger places adding hot dogs. We'll tell you about that. It's 5:27.
From ABC News Tech Trends, dating apps and online services.
They're right in the wheelhouse with how young people engage with lots of types of information today.
For every personality trait,
join ChristianMingle.com.
It seems there's a dating site.
FarmersOnly.com is the new online dating site for farmers.
And the popularity of the sites has fed on itself.
People have seen family members and other loved ones use online dating and have good experiences with it.
Aaron Smith of the Pew Research Center says that more than half of Americans now view online dating as a good way to meet people, and about 12% of them have actually tried it. Just a couple of years ago, swipe left meant nothing to most of us.
Left, left, swipe left. You gotta swipe it left.
Now the term for rejecting a potential date on the Tinder app is familiar enough to find its way into an anti-smoking campaign.
Young people today obviously are very comfortable engaging with mobile information.
Every year, another dating app finds its way into our smartphones. With Tech Trends, Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:38. Welcome back to the program this morning here on The Opening Bell. It's time to bring in one of our favorite guests and one of the hardest working guys in startup and innovation in Chicago. Scott Catoon is with us, and Scott is the host of Tomorrow's Business Today here on WGN, WGN Plus. Scott, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you doing?
Thank you. I'm doing well, thanks. News that is what is good for the startup and innovation community here in Chicago. They're getting a lot of buzz. I was actually talking to somebody in London last week, and they were telling me about your last Technori event or the last Technori event that they were supposed to be here and couldn't because they were delayed by weather, and they were completely bummed, and they were hoping that they could come for the next one. And I said I'd make sure I'd get the right date from you and talk about that. So this is a global thing, isn't it?
That it's true. That's amazing, though, to hear that they're in London talking about that. That's amazing news.
And very disappointed that they couldn't come into this. I guess there was somebody they wanted to see at that last event. But when is the next one? It's coming. You do one. There's one every month, right? And one is coming up.
That is correct. That is correct. That they do one every month. This one, I believe, I want to say it's February 26th. I can check on that, actually, but I think it's February 26th. And they've actually just announced the companies that are going to be in, you know, doing their presentation. And one of the things that's really interesting about it is most of them are sort of centered around social impact and being able to sort of bring the community together and help, you know, either raise money, raise awareness, raise happiness, things like that, which is really kind of strange because Chicago doesn't seem like, you know, it's a windy city. It doesn't seem like a place that is all about that kind of thing, but it's a really kind of a new phenomenon such that one of the guys is a former venture capitalist for the Pritzker Group, actually just started a $10 million fund. It came out, I think, yesterday to help raise awareness and raise some money for those causes.
I brought up the London thing, too, to sort of have a conversation about the not just the social impact, but just the cool factor of having a group like 1871 here and some of these other startups from a social perspective of just living in a place where something cool's happening. That is a positive, reinforcing thing for the community, isn't it?
It definitely is. And in fact, the Technori event now is the third largest single gathering talking about technology, you know, monthly single gathering in the entire country. So that gives you a little bit of perspective of how quickly this community has grown and how quickly the awareness and the attention and the interest has grown around it.
And I wasn't aware that it may actually be spreading. I don't know if you saw this, but is there going to be one in Milwaukee now?
There is. There's two things going on. If you've ever heard of the Commons, which is a sort of an 1871-like community, but it's built around all of the different colleges. There's like 13 colleges in the Milwaukee area, not talking about Madison, but just in Milwaukee area alone. And so there's going to be one in Milwaukee. They've already had a few of them in Atlanta. There's plans to expand it to New York and some other places, Tennessee, Nashville, and I can't remember the other one. Philadelphia, I believe, is another one. So I mean, this is something that's kind of growing rapidly. These are all 2016 expansion plans.
Again, we're talking with Scott Catoon. It's Tomorrow's Business Today at WGN Radio, WGN Plus. Scott, recently you had on one of your programs Erica Weigel. You were talking about female founders, and this is sort of an ongoing discussion we have here on The Opening Bell about getting more women involved in leadership positions of business. Talk to me about how Erica sees this and what's happening on that front to get more women out in the front.
Yeah, so I actually sit on the board of advisors for Women Tech Founders. And so there's two different kind of things, the two schools of thought, if you will. There's a technical side, which is to just get women and female founders and girls that are, you know, in high school and even younger to take an interest in engineering and in science and math, and hope that develops their skill set and develops their interest in getting in things like manufacturing. In Erica's case, She went to Northern Illinois and was an engineering student with one, like, four girls to graduate. So she goes there into local high schools and talks to girls about what the manufacturing field looks like now and how different it is from when their parents, you know, did it, and what the significance has been in her life to be working in the engineering and manufacturing space, which is super, super important because it helps increase the interest level of girls growing up and makes them more interested in perhaps starting their own business. What the Women in Tech and Women Tech Founders and Miss Tech and these other female-led organizations are doing is taking those girls that now have an interest and wrapping around an infrastructure, a support system that will help them raise the capital that they need to start their own business, give them the support that they're going to need to launch a successful business. And Chicago, as I've said to you, I think before, is really at the forefront of women in business.
Yesterday actually was the first ever International Day of Women and Girls in Science, sponsored by the United Nations. And they were bringing up examples of women through history who've been discriminated against. I mean, really smart women who've had amazing ideas. And one example they used was Emmy Noether, who was a woman that Albert Einstein called one of the most significant mathematicians of the time. We all know what Albert Einstein did yesterday with gravitational waves. He knows how to pick them. So that's a good example of, I mean, does that discrimination, is it getting any better? I mean, are we fixing that problem at all? Do you get a sense?
Well, you know, I mean, I'd like to say yes, but I suppose that people thinking two guys talking about it in the morning probably wouldn't have, you know, a very good idea of what it's like to be discriminated against. But personally, I think that things are getting better. I'm sure that it's not even, and I'm sure that it's not easy at all. But the fact that these amazing organizations have put time and money and effort behind making the path easier, every single next girl that steps up and starts something new, the hope is that it's a little bit easier for each one.
There are a couple of women, particularly the head of the COO of Facebook, who says, no, it's not getting any better. There are only about 37 world leaders who are women when more than half the population is, a female. So let's hope it gets better. You can find more information about this, by the way, at the United Nations website. Yesterday was the first ever International Day of Women and Girls. Scott, it's always good talking with you. What do you have coming up on WGN Plus?
We've got a couple of really cool guests coming up. You know, one of the things that we're going to try to get lined up for one of our next shows is Emerson Spartz, who is the head of Dose.com and is also somebody that the Tribune has recently invested a significant amount of money in, and another company called Fizz, which is going to be presenting at Technori this month, and they have a really cool spin on how to gauge customer and employee happiness and awareness and creating mobilized communities, which is really interesting.
You can find Scott and Tomorrow's Business Today on WGN at TBT on WGN. Scott, thanks for being with us this morning.
Thank you, Steve.
It's 5:45. This is The Opening Bell. Time to check traffic. Here's Mary Vandeville.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. Dow Futures finally back in the green. Positive this morning, up 114 points. S&P Futures up 16. Oil is trading at $27.40 pre-market this morning. Gold is down. Corn is down as well. Speaking of corn, let's get the latest on commodities. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Another bad day for the cattle market because Wall Street did not do very well yesterday. So we saw live cattle futures falling fairly hard yesterday, with February live cattle closing down $2.35. April cattle ended the day down $2.27. Part of that, though, was weakness in the cash cattle market. Yesterday morning, we found cash cattle in the plains bringing $128 to $134 per hundredweight, and that was $2 to $4 off the prices paid last week. We did get some strength in the lean hog contracts at the Merck yesterday. The hog fundamentals now more supportive than cattle, given cheaper pork than beef compared with the historical norms. Reports from the Federal Reserve Banks of St. Louis, Kansas City, and Chicago indicating demand for bank loans, loan extensions, and renewals climbing sharply among U.S. farmers as farm incomes are forecast to fall for a third year. This weekend, I'll be in Cincinnati for the Outstanding Young Farmer Awards Congress. Max Armstrong in Louisville for the National Farm Machinery Show. I'm Orion Samuelson. Have a good day.
Have a great weekend, Orion. Burger King has unveiled two versions of a hot dog, a classic and a chili cheese dog that they're going to roll out across the country eventually. But guess what? Not here in Chicago. I wonder why. One executive has called the hot dog the biggest launch at Burger King since the 1970s. So let's bring in ABC News correspondent Megan Hughes, who's been covering this story over the past few days. This is a big launch, isn't it, Megan?
Except today. They're rolling it out. They've been working on this. They did test it out in about five different markets for the past year or so, and they think this is going to work. So we're hearing a lot of Hot Dog King. They're saying this is the biggest change since they introduced chicken in the 1970s. I am saying all day long, is the wiener the winner for this restaurant chain? But, you know, we see this a lot with fast food restaurants. They roll out something and they're giving it a try.
Have they been testing this somewhere, or they have some idea that this might work?
They have. So they've tested it in five different cities, Salt Lake City, Memphis, Baltimore, Detroit, Kansas City. I don't know. I'm curious if it's a little bit of an insult that they didn't test it in Chicago, which is, you know, a hot dog haven. But they did not release any numbers on what kind of success they had, but they apparently had enough success that they think this is going to work. It also helped them narrow down. They had a corn dog that they were trying out that did not make the cut. They also had a hot dog that they had that had A1 sauce on it, also did not make the cut. So they're going to be releasing two different hot dogs, the classic, which has mustard, ketchup, onions, and relish, and a chili cheese version, which has obviously chili and cheese.
Well, we're very particular about our hot dogs here in Chicago, so maybe it's a sign that they're not too good if they're not going to try them here. I mean, we have some pretty good taste for hot dogs. Should that worry people?
You know, I was thinking about that. It'll be interesting to see how these do in Chicago, because on the one hand, you've got a lot of hot dog restaurant options already there in Chicago. On the other hand, people are used to the hot dog being sort of a staple. So maybe people will go in, and these are cheap hot dogs. It's $1.99 for the classic and $2.39 for the chili cheese.
This comes at a time when the fast food restaurants are all competing very hot and heavy against each other. What is Burger King hoping to do here? Are they trying to knock a little off McDonald's?
Well, they are trying something new, and McDonald's has certainly started to ramp up the competition. The offering breakfast all day has sparked a turnaround for McDonald's. They were actually in a pretty significant slump, but obviously still the industry leader. Wendy's has a $4 for $4 deal to try and get customers in the door. And like I've said, we've seen restaurant chains, fast food chains, always doing these iterations. You might remember Burger King tried a lower calorie French fry, the Satis fry. That didn't really go anywhere. They made chicken fries permanent. And at one point, they actually tried popcorn. So the CEO, the North American CEO, said, "This is obvious. You know, we talk about our flame grilled meat, and hot dogs are a natural fit. So this is the grilled hot dog."
The Snoop Dogg.
Snoop Dogg and Charo are actually being involved in their training videos. The Snoop Dogg is going to be involved in helping the workers learn how to prepare these hot dogs.
And then Charo's going to be dancing?
You know, I haven't seen the videos yet, but it's pretty interesting marketing. I guess they're trying to get their workers pumped up about getting these hot dogs ready for customers.
ABC News correspondent Megan Hughes with us via Skype from Washington about the launch of the Burger King hot dog. By the way, it'll be available at some stores starting February 23rd, but as Megan said, not in Chicago. The calendar, the economic calendar today includes a couple of big events. The U.S. Commerce Department releases advanced monthly sales for retail and food services, manufacturing, trade, inventories, and sales. The U.S. Labor Department is going to publish import and export price index for January of 2016. Later on today, the Toady Awards are going to be announced. It's the Toy of the Year. We'll find out what that is just as the big toy fair is getting underway in New York. Also in New York, New York Fashion Week is getting underway, and Chicago Auto Show is getting underway as well. So those are just some of the things we'll be watching today. The first of those probably impacting the markets at some point. We'll keep a good watch on the New York Stock Exchange and futures throughout the morning. That's the opening bell for today. We want to thank you for tuning in today. Our producer is Mary Sandberg, with production help from Kevin Powell and Ross Cochran. Bob Ferguson in this morning, our engineer. Have a wonderful weekend. Have a good Valentine's Day. The Steve Cochran Show is next. We'll be back bright and early Monday morning at 5 a.m. Have a great day. It's 5:57.